The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt live from Studio Winterthur in the faraway north. I am live. The wall is up. The internets are connected. The studio is hot, as we like to say, and there's lots of news. Let me begin with the rundown. The Supreme Court yesterday, again, for maybe the third time in 4 years, told every single government entity in the United States it may not discriminate against religious individuals, institutions, or programs. Quote, in particular, we have repeatedly held that a state violates the Free Exercise Clause of the Constitution when it excludes religious observers from otherwise available public benefits. That's the Chief Justice Roberts writing for a 6-3 Supreme Court, ordering the state of Maine that their scholarship student, their scholarship program for students who must leave the county because there is no secondary school. In faraway North Maine, way up in the woods, there are many counties that do not have secondary schools. There aren't enough students to justify the cost, the expense. And so they just give a voucher to every high school student. The state of Maine gives every high school student in the north of Maine, the west of Maine, the tree of Maine, just one giant forest with some people living in it. They each get a voucher and they go off to prep school. They go to any school they want. Except Maine said you can't go to a religious school. And the Supreme Court said, that's unconstitutional. And I've been predicting that's unconstitutional for an entire year because I teach con law and I teach a First Amendment seminar. And if you look at Trinity Lutheran, if you look at the Montana case last year, they just keep saying it again and again. Stop discriminating states, local governments, the federal government against religious organizations or individuals. You may not do that. That's a violation of the Free Exercise Clause. Now they've said it three times. Maybe people will begin to listen to them. And it is not an Establishment Clause violation to give a voucher to a student to go to a religious school. It just isn't. End of story. Done. So the headline in the Washington Post is Supreme Court says Maine cannot deny tuition aid to religious schools. Politico, by the way, this morning has a poll out showing that parents are the new swing voters, that they favor education reform, charters in many places. They favor cleaning up the school mess of the last 2 years. You see, one of the few very good effects of COVID was when all the students got sent home because the teachers' unions didn't want to teach. And all the students got sent home. Parents began to look over their shoulder on the Chromebooks that they were given by the school districts that they didn't know how to work and that they were playing games on. But when they were actually looking, they didn't like what they saw. And they didn't like that the students stayed home a long time. And they did not like the politics. And they are voting against school board members across the United States. Incumbents across the United States are going to get tossed out in the fall if they haven't already been tossed out. There is a majority in the Senate. Indeed, there are 60 votes in the Senate for the school safety bill. And this is a very good thing. I am a big proponent of what John Cornyn has put together. John Cornyn did this with the assistance of Tom Tillis. They already have 9 other Republicans, so that's 11, including, and crucially, Leader McConnell joined last night in praising the legislative language. He had been holding back. He wanted to see what the legislative language said before he joined in. And upon reviewing the legislative language, he now says it's going forward. Gun deal in Senate moves closer to reality after key snags are resolved. And I got a bunch of stuff from Senator Cornyn's office on the bill. It reads, quote, this is a targeted bit of legislation addressing specific problems that have led to recent mass shooting. Get that? They're specifically addressing Uvalde. And there was news on Uvalde, which I'll come to in a second. Unless you are adjudicated mentally ill or a convicted violent criminal, your Second Amendment rights are not affected by this bill. So don't get upset. If you are a gun proponent, a gun owner, it's not going to impact you and you're law abiding. The proposal ensures schools are safe. Kids are protected without placing new restrictions on law abiding gun owners. Big new investment, mental health care. including in rural areas. More resources for school safety and school hardening helps keep gun out of the hands of those who aren't supposed to have them. Federal funding to implement programs to help those suffering from mental illness, like veterans courts, homelessness courts, assisted outpatient treatment, increases to mental health and suicide prevention programs, crisis and trauma intervention, that's all good. Invests in telehealth, mental health services in schools, including early identification and intervention. Intervention being the key to me. They have known from the beginning who the disturbed children are. And when they turn 18, they ought not to be able to run out and get a gun. And so there are additional times for waiting if you're between 18 and 20. And if there's a reason for concern, it's a 10-day waiting period, and that's good. The Biden priority list got rejected completely. While the legislation that will clear the Senate, and hopefully the House will pass it, strengthens but does not expand the background system, it includes a process to search for and review potentially disqualifying juvenile records for only buyers under 21. The process sunset in 10 years and is repealed unless it's renewed. Automatic restoration of gun rights for individuals convicted of misdemeanor domestic violence after 5 years. But if you are convicted of misdemeanor domestic violence, you're not going to get a gun for 5 years. Don't get convicted for misdemeanor domestic violence. I'm actually all for that. If you hit somebody, if you're an abusing spouse or partner, you shouldn't be able to buy a gun, period, if you're convicted. That's a due process protection, not accused, convicted. The Biden agenda, mandatory waiting period for all gun sales, 21-day waiting period for all firearms for 18 to 20. The high-capacity magazine ban, that's out the door. That's not in the law. Universal background checks are not in the law. Licensing requirement for purchasing a so-called assault weapon is not in the law. It's a good, good law. Now, it does not create a national federal red flag law. It incentivizes states to adopt them, only because it's easier to get the money, as I read it. Now, the Senator Cornyn said it does not incentivize red flag laws. I'll have to ask him about that because there does seem to be a disparity here. I think it does incentivize good red flag laws, and it does not incentivize bad red flag laws. Polling also provided by Senator Cornyn. 79%, and these are 1,000, this is of gun-owning households. This is a poll of people who own guns. 79% of gun-owning households support gun legislation increasing federal funding for states to implement and strengthen red flag laws. 86% of gun-owning households prohibit any person from purchasing or owning firearms who have been convicted of domestic violence against girlfriend, boyfriend, spouse, or significant other. 87% of gun-owning households support making criminal and mental health records of juveniles available to the background system. Do you understand? That is wild. That is just wild. The gun owners are very, very in favor of this. Meanwhile, we have learned the failure in Uvalde. The abject failure, according to the Texas Department of Public Safety. The head of the Texas Department of Public and Safety, I'm reading from the Washington Post, on Tuesday assailed the police response to the massacre at Uvalde as an abject failure, describing in damning detail how officers quickly entered the school, obtained protective shields, but left defenseless children trapped inside with the gunman for more than an hour. The door was not locked. Within 19 minutes, police had a protective ballistic shield inside. Not long after, a student inside called 911 and more ballistic shield arrived. More gunfire periodically rang out from the attacker. They didn't have to wait. So there is a massive failure, probably by the officer in charge, at the scene. It will just be torture for the parents and the families and the loved ones and people looking on to know the massive failure by the officer. Katie Britt will be the next senator from Alabama. That's good news. Bad news, U.S. existing home sale prices hit a record in May. Home prices are still going up, even though interest rates have now crossed into the 7% land. People are still buying houses hand over foot because they expect them to increase year over year, and they're willing to pay the 7%, which is fine because I think they're going to 12.5%. Don't wait around to buy your new home or your second home, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. From Studio Winterthur, I will be with you all summer from here. Stay tuned. I'm back. Thanks, Ed Morrissey. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined now by Congressman Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District. Congressman, welcome back. How old are you, Congressman?
I'm 38 years old from the 8th Congressional District.
I'm sorry.
Don't confuse me with Paul Ryan / Brian Stiles District.
Right. The 8th Congressional. So you're 38. You're Aaron Rodgers' age. Aaron Rodgers is the new Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, the guy moves like the Goodyear blimp. Really, the blimp gets over the field faster than Rodgers does. Is this Jordan Love's year? I've been reading the training camp, and they're basically saying Jordan Love is in. Rodgers is done. He can't move. He's Ben.
Who won the MVP last year?
I know, but, at some point, you become Ben Roethlisberger, and 38 is that year. How are your knees? Have you run farther than 3 miles
I
yet?
I keep fast at 38. So
yeah, but you're running shorter distances. I'm just saying, Jordan Love, this is his year, right?
This will be Rodgers' year. This will be the Packers' year. We'll have the best defense in football, too. So I'm very confident.
That's actually the Browns. Yeah, all right, Congressman, the NDA is underway. First, please tell people what the NDA is. And then what are you looking to get done in it?
The National Defense Authorization Act, basically the bill, the annual bill that tells the Defense Department what it can and cannot do and how much money it's authorized to spend and what it is allowed to spend that money on. So that's what we will be debating starting 10 a.m. today and probably going until 4 a.m. tomorrow, straight through with some vote interruptions.
What? Really?
It is an extravaganza. It usually goes into the wee hours of the morn. So there was
it's like the Votorama on
amendments.
Reconciliation. What do you have any amendments that you're pushing?
I submitted about 30 amendments, most of which I would say if there's a consistent theme were the way to operationalize in legislative fashion what I've written about in the past was something I've called Battle Force 2025. I wrote something with the Foundation of Defensive Democracies, and it's all about how we prepare to defend Taiwan from Chinese communist aggression within the next 5 years, because my concern is that the Defense Department is moving too slow, is not moving with a sense of urgency. And if you look at the budget that President Biden submitted, both this budget and the last budget, what they're proposing to do is to divest of certain systems we have currently, get rid of certain legacy systems, and invest in new unproven technology. Now, we all want to fund new technology, but the problem is this stuff won't come online until the mid-2030s, and we feel that's going to be too late. So I have a variety of amendments that are designed to push the Defense Department to move faster. For example, forcing them to restructure the way in which we just organize our command for war in the Pacific so that we're not doing that on the fly if war breaks out. Another amendment tasking the Defense Department to tell us how the production rates for certain munitions, many of which we're expending in Ukraine, stack up against the requirement for critical munitions. So figuring out how we replenish our stockpiles, because the lesson of Ukraine in my mind is that you want to arm your allies and partners before war breaks out, before deterrence fails, not after the fact, because it gets very difficult. Now, the biggest debate of all, Hugh, and this isn't just me, regards the Navy. This is something to watch closely. So the president's budget wanted to retire 24 ships in the next fiscal year.
Mostly heavy cruisers.
Cruisers, littoral combat ships, but yeah, mostly cruisers and LCSs. Now, they wanted to buy, at the same time, 9 ships. So check my math, 24 versus 9, but that's a net loss of 15 ships. So you're cutting the Navy dramatically at a time when we need a bigger Navy to counter a growing China, a China that's fielding aircraft carriers, that's fielding extraordinarily capable destroyer equivalents, frigate equivalents. Do not believe it, the Secretary of the Navy when he says, well, sure, they're building more ships than us, but our ships are better. Okay, our ships on balance are better, but they're increasingly fielding very capable ships in massive quantities at a very fast rate. So what we're doing in bipartisan fashion, I would note, which is very significant, we're going to authorize 14 ships. We're going to preserve 5, 4 amphibs plus 1 cruiser. and then save five LCS plus a couple other ships. So by my count, we're going from a 15 ship net loss to a plus two ship gain after what the Golden Amendment passes. Jared Golden is a Democrat from Maine who's going to submit an amendment to increase the overall top line. So still not enough ships, by the way, Hugh, but a massive rejection of President Biden and Secretary Austin's plan for the Navy. And I think a positive bipartisan step where Congress is saying, no, we are not going along with this. We're not going to starve the Navy. We're not going to defund the Department of Defense at a time of rising geopolitical threats. So I think we'll see a good outcome on the overall top line, as well as on the specific attempts to reverse the cuts to the Navy that the president is proposing.
Now, I brought along with me to provide and maintain a Navy our friend Jerry Hendrick's book on the sole constitutional command about force structure is that you and the Congress are to provide and maintain a Navy. A Navy that implicitly defends the United States. That means not only the additional ships, but the kind of ship. Did you add back a submarine? Is the Virginia class get an additional submarine?
I believe we did. There's going to be some debate over that, and then some bigger debate over what the defense industrial base, the shipbuilding industrial base, can handle right now. I mean, if you play any war game with regards to China and the U.S., fighting over Taiwan, you quickly realize how critical submarines are. Submarines give us an asymmetric advantage that right now China cannot match. So the stupidest thing we could do would be to take our foot off the gas when it comes to submarine production. Now, Hugh, here's the thing. Submarines exist for a variety of purposes, but one of which is to fire weapons in war. We quickly go, in any war game I've participated in, we quickly go Winchester on these weapon systems fired from subs, which means we fire all of them and then we're out of gas. So further reason why we can't just have submarines, we also need long range fires fired from positions in the southern Japanese island, as well as the northern Philippine islands, in order to target surface ships that are from the PLA Navy that are trying to cross the strait. And there we have a lot of work to do. Also a lot of work to do in terms of delivering critical weapon systems to the Taiwanese. The latest reports are that the harpoons they want to buy aren't going to get there till 2027 or 2029. Hugh, that's too late. We need to completely restructure the way in which we provide foreign military sales to Taiwan. I don't think we're going to be able to do that in this bill because of jurisdictional concerns, because the Foreign Affairs Committee controls military sales. But this needs to be a top agenda item for a Republican-controlled Congress. A complete overhaul of our aid and foreign military sales structure to Taiwan in order to force them to buy asymmetric weapon systems in the short terms and get them the munitions they need within the Davidson window within the next 5 years.
Congressman, I want to explain something for the Steelers fans. The NDAA is not an appropriations bill. You are the Armed Services Committee is to the Appropriations Committee as an architect is to the general contractor. You give them the blueprint. They have to decide what to build. They have to decide what to spend. And so hopefully they will move. But to me, if the Republicans get the House back, they have to move immediately. And I hope you tell Leader McCarthy this, and soon to be Speaker McCarthy, that they've got to pass a Defense Appropriations Act in January 2nd week and send it to the Senate, which hopefully will be controlled by Leader McConnell. Because operating on a continuing resolution destroys the ability of the Department of Defense to actually get anything done. Can you move quickly as though it were a war? If the Davidson window is real and if the Republicans really believe in it, they ought to move quickly on the FY24 DOD budget, right?
100%. And you said move quickly as if it were a war. Well, let's move quickly as if we wanted to avoid a war. I mean, that's what deterrence is all about. And it's far less costly than what we would have to spend if indeed deterrence fails in the Indo-Pacific, in the first island chain, and look no further than what's happening in Ukraine to understand the devastating costs when deterrence fails or when your entire theory of deterrence is built on naive assumptions, like the idea that the threat of ineffective sanctions could deter war or the threat of being disinvited from Davos could deter war. No, Hugh, it's all about hard power, and we need to make sure that the defense budget, our investment in hard power, is not held hostage to domestic progressive priorities in the next Congress.
Every time Republicans win legislative majorities, they adopt the calendar as it has always existed. There is no sense of urgency. Has someone raised their house hand and said to the House Republican caucus, when we get the majority, we will move within the first week? Because you can do it in the House. You can't do it in the Senate. We will move in the first week to pass a defense budget and appropriate. We will do it so that we, you know, we can campaign on that. But then you got to actually deliver. We adopted the old calendar, and the old calendar is based on Ronald Reagan having won the Cold War. It doesn't apply.
It's a great idea. I know Leader McCarthy is really taking seriously the legislative agenda. He's formed all these task forces. And, you know, if you ask him what his top priorities are, he'll say China and the debt. Beating China and fixing the debt. Two issues that go hand in hand, by the way. But the key point to remember is that it's not the defense budget, though it is big, that's driving up the debt. We're still spending way less than 4% of GDP on defense. And inflation, even though we're going to have a massive increase in the overall top line budget to the tune of $37 billion, so we're going from $813 billion to $850 billion, inflation's still going to take a big, big chunk out of that. And oh, by the way, the Defense Department admitted to us, Hugh, that the numbers they used to estimate inflation were totally bogus. They were operating under naive sort of 2% numbers, which make no sense. So even
every time an
F-18
takes off from a carrier, people went and saw Top Gun. Every time they practice, and they got to practice a lot, it costs 10% more than they had planned on it last year, right?
Absolutely. It's crazy. You know, the other thing I would add to this, let's call it a 100-day sprint where we're working all the time in the new Congress. And we you know, end the vacation, no recess. Let's just pass all the bills that the voters want. We also need to secure the southern border. We also need to make progress on basic oversight issues. Constituents still reach out to me about the complete absence of accountability for the embarrassing, humiliating fiasco in Afghanistan. So in addition to funding the Defense Department, there are just certain things we need to do from an oversight perspective to hold people accountable for multiple failures we've seen in recent years.
1 minute. A select committee on the collapse in Afghanistan would make sense. A select committee, a real one, where you let the Democrats – actually, McCarthy could go full Pelosi and not let the Democrats pick their members, but I suppose Kevin will play by the rules. But a focused select committee on the collapse in Afghanistan, is that in the cards? 30 seconds, Congress.
It is underway. Also, Representative Luria and myself quickly will be submitting an amendment to create a commission on the future of the Navy and the crisis in the Navy, because we've backslid for years and years.
Good
so
for her.
Good people on that.
Good for her to join you in that. She's still going to lose, but good for her. Congressman Gallagher, you are the Jordan Love of the Congress, about to trot onto the field. I'm glad to hear it. But say goodbye to the old people, because Lane Luria and Aaron Rodgers go in the way of all human things. Thank you, Congressman. Be well. Westbury joins me next. We'll talk about how high mortgage interest rates will go. I'm just going to focus him on that. I think they're going to go to 9, maybe 10. We'll find out from Westbury next on the Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. From Studio Winterthur, I'm back live. Thanks to Ed Morrissey for sitting in for me for the last 2 days. I'm joined by Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Hugh. It's good to be back on with you, wherever you are up north.
Well, you know, I'm patrolling. The Canadians are trying to flee Justin Trudeau, so I'm patrolling the border. There is no border patrol up here, and there isn't much on the southern border. Senator, let me begin by asking you, I have heard John Cornyn and Mitch McConnell. Have you had a chance to read the school safety bill yet, the red flag funding and the mental health funding, and whether or not you know if you're going to support it or not?
I have, Hugh. Unfortunately, we didn't have much time last night before we voted on it, so I voted against proceeding to the bill. But since then, I've reviewed it more carefully, and I will continue to be opposed to the bill. Like any legislation, it has some good measures in it. For instance, including juvenile criminal records and mental health backgrounds for gun purchasers under 21, or additional funding for training programs that help gun dealers recognize suspicious gun purchasers. But I'm very worried about the vagueness and the broadness of some of the other provisions. So, for instance, in the so-called red flag provisions, there's no structural limitations to ensure that law-abiding Americans have due process protection. There's only general vague language left to the discretion of Merrick Garland and Vinita Gupta after what they did, for instance, on sicking the feds on school board or parents attending school boards. I'm simply not willing to do that.
Now, I anticipated that, Senator. Do you think even you're also very objective about the Senate? Do you think there are 11, at least 11 Republican votes to advance the bill to the House?
Hugh, I would assume there are, unfortunately, because I don't think this bill is moving in the right direction. But 14 Republicans voted yes last night on the motion to proceed. That's typically a preview of how they will vote on passage. I suppose it's possible that with more time to study the bill, as we had after that vote last night, or with potential amendment, that some of those Republicans may change their mind. But I expect it will pass. But I just don't think this is going to address the challenges we see. For instance, last night there was a conversation with bill authors and their staff about what specifically in this bill might have prevented the terrible shooting in Uvalde, and they couldn't point to a single specific provision.
You know, the Uvalde is not the reason to act, because the more we learn about what the police did, the more it becomes apparent that most, if not all, of the casualties could have been prevented with the best practices adopted by that school. Right. Locking the doors outside and interior doors. And then the door wasn't locked. I mean, I'm just kind of stunned by that. Let me ask you about yesterday's Supreme Court decision 6-3 upholding the free exercise clause. You are a Harvard Law graduate. I have played Jeffrey Toobin's analysis. I played other CNN analysts saying that the Establishment Clause is under threat. What do you say to them, Senator Cotton?
Well, the Establishment Clause is not under threat to you. What has long been under threat because of misguided and outdated Supreme Court cases is the Free Exercise Clause. And I'm grateful that the court once again ruled that when a state government wants to provide funding for parents on neutral grounds to educate, single out religious schools as uniquely disqualified from getting those funds. That's what the state of Maine had done in districts where there were no public high schools. They would give state funds to parents to help educate their teenage children if they had prohibited it from going to religious schools. This is in keeping with other decisions that have been made in recent years. There was a case out in Montana a year or two ago. All these states should just get it through their mind that they cannot single out religious schools or religious institutions for unique or special kinds of mistreatment or debarment from federal funds. It was a big victory for religious freedom yesterday.
Yeah, but we have to keep winning the same war. It's the third time. The Chief Justice's audible sigh is in his writing, saying, how many times do we have to tell you that free exercise cannot be abridged in the name of a bad Establishment Clause doctrine? Senator, I want to talk to you about something I asked Congressman Gallagher about. If the House and the Senate flip in November, as I expect they will, back to Republican control, will you stay? Have you talked to the leader, McConnell, about advancing the appropriations process for DOD and the NDAA for 2024 so that we are not on the count? We don't have to wait a full year before getting the military fully funded and send that bill to the president quickly. I know the budget resolution has to come first, all that stuff, but really we can't follow the same calendar.
Well, I think that's a high priority, Hugh. The Department of Defense is the first priority of our federal government. It's not the ultimate or the highest role of government, but it's the most basic and fundamental role for government, which is to protect us from threats. It's not just another agency. It's not just another department that provides jobs to Democratic client groups. It protects all of us, and therefore its budget has to be determined in a separate fashion. You don't set your strategy based on your budget. You have to set your budget based on your strategy. So I would favor earlier movement on the annual defense bill and the defense budget. I would also favor taking the Department of Defense out of the kind of frozen animation that the government goes into anytime we have one of these short-term stopgap spending measures, where you just continued last year's spending level, but more importantly, you don't allow an agency or a department to move funds around to different programs and priorities. It's one thing to do that in the Department of Commerce. It's another thing to do it in the Department of Defense, which has long-term, multi-year, multi-trillion dollar weapons programs. They need that added flexibility on those occasions when Congress doesn't move quickly enough to get an annual budget passed.
Now, Senator, this will be a tough question for you. I have a column coming out in the Washington Post today saying Joe Biden's just got to shake it up. He's got to move Ron Klain over to replace Merrick Garland. He's got to get rid of the deadwood in the White House. He's got to put new secretary. Has any Biden cabinet secretary gotten even a C? It's a tough question. Has any of them done even an average job? Because I honestly don't think any of them have, but maybe you can think of one.
I can't think of one, Hugh. Most of them are down in the F territory, similar to their boss's grade. You know, a year ago, Democrats were talking about Joe Biden being the second coming of FDR and LBJ. I think at this point, we'd all just be satisfied if he could claw his way back to being the second coming of Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, I'm glad the president wasn't hurt when he fell off of his bike. But metaphors like that one are pretty hard not to comment on, Senator.
Well, there's that bike meme on the internet that people have used hundreds and hundreds of times, and it looks like Joe Biden was living out the bike meme of putting a stick in his own spokes, and he's really put a stick in the spokes of America's economy and America's defenses over his first year and a half in office. Time to get the sticks out of the spokes and start driving hard forward to a much better future for our country.
Last question, Senator.
Democrats are in charge in Washington.
Heather Boucher is a Biden economic advisor. She was on the Washington Post Live yesterday. And I'm not going to play you the whole quote on enough time, but she said, we're not worried about the recession or inflation because family balance sheets are strong and there's enough wiggle room to get through these times. Is that what you hear in Arkansas or when you're in New Hampshire or Iowa or wherever you're going?
But no, that may be what they say up in Northwest Washington when they go to their fancy dinner parties because they've insulated themselves from the consequences of their own decisions. But when Arkansans are paying $4.50 a gallon for gas and $4 or $5 for a carton of eggs, there's not a lot of wiggle room. And to the extent family has wiggle room, it's getting tighter and tighter every month as budgets get more and more crunched. So
I just had a trucker call from Columbus. $6 plus for diesel in Columbus. That means everything that is delivered is going to go up by a buck and a half or 20%.
Yeah. Well, energy inflation is a particularly corrosive kind of, as you say, Hugh, energy inflation affects every nation, the price of goods that our factories produce for us. And energy inflation ripples through the entire economy. Now, remember, the energy inflation we're seeing, whether it's the price of gas or the price of electricity, is not an unintended consequence. It's not an accident. This is exactly what the Democrats want to happen. Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez have proposed that we eliminate all fossil fuels from our energy mix in 10 years, Hugh, in just 10 years. You know, that's 90% of all the electricity we generate in America. You know, they have this fantasy that we're going to move to wind and solar. You know, we get almost twice as much energy from wood, water, and crops in this country as we get from wind and solar. But the Democrats are putting their ideology ahead of your family's budget and our energy security and therefore our national security.
This is quick, Senator. The Washington Post ran a 2,000-word story yesterday on why there are no new refineries being built. Would you need 2,000 words to answer that question?
No, the answer to it is Joe Biden looking into a girl's eyes on the campaign trail and promising her, I guarantee you, we're going to end fossil fuels.
Yep. I wouldn't build a refinery either. Who would invest in her? Senator Tom Cotton, follow him on Twitter, send Tom Cotton. Thank you, Senator. I'll be right back. John Cornyn was on the floor last night defending the bill on school safety and additional measures to harden schools and do deeper background checks for teens who are buying guns. We'll hear from him when we return.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.